You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-hosts, Vanana.
What's up?
And Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to 126 of the Fanboy Garage. Hope you all had a great holiday. We are just days away from closing out 2021 and kicking off 2020. Well, closing out 2020. Durr! And starting 2021. It's been that kind of year. Hope you guys are all doing well. We're excited because we get to finally talk about Wonder Woman 84.
Yeah,
that's it. The biggest blockbuster film of this year, I guess, that was still holding out.
Yeah,
debuted on HBO Max on Christmas Day, and one of us just saw it.
Yeah,
and you know, it is what it is. But we're gonna get into it. We'll get, now spoil like this is gonna be a full on spoiler filled review.
Yeah.
So if you're not, have you not seen the film, we're going to let you, we'll give you like a three count, like 3, 2, 1, get the hell out of here. And we're going to do this.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've been waiting for, it's weird because like the three of us have not discussed this movie at all. Right. Other than the fact that we knew when we all saw it. Right. So, and like I was kind of dancing around a conversation with Tavo, like without giving like details. And, but for some reason in the last 2 days, people have come out of the woodwork and they've been like asking me if I saw it and giving me their opinions. Like people that, I mean, they know that we do this podcast, but like they've never really jumped to share opinions about a movie like this. And maybe it's because it was so easily available that like a lot more people saw it first weekend than they normally would. But yeah, it was kind of crazy. So I was like, I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to like lose all of my thoughts that I've been storing up now for days. But you know, I guess we'll start with just general opinion, right? Before we dig into all the details and then we overanalyze and nitpick and get into all that fun stuff. So for me, the most basic opinion that I can have on this movie is that it was a colossal disappointment. And I say that not because I had high expectations or any other reason other than the simple fact is that my plan was to watch this movie probably 2 or 3 times over the course of the weekend. And the first time I watched it, I said, you know what? I am just going to watch this for the first time purely for the entertainment, escapism and all of that stuff. I'm not going to analyze it. I'm just going to, I want to sit there and get lost in the moment and enjoy it as an entertainment. And then I'll watch it again and analyze it and nitpick and stuff like that. My first viewing, I wasn't entertained. Like I, when the movie was over, my opinion was, oh, well, that's over. Okay. Let me just get on with my day. Like that was my opinion. And it's weird because the more I thought about the movie, then I started to like think about all these faults and flaws and stuff that I had with it. But like, that's beside the point. Just for me, the biggest, my immediate reaction was that was disappointing. And then I just like most of my thoughts formulated more like the next day or two. To me, this is a movie that the more you think about it, well, the more I thought about it, the less I liked it. And I didn't love it watching it the first time. I was bored for long stretches of this movie, which I did not expect to happen. So I just thought it was too long, and it was too long, but a lot of things happened very quickly and without a lot of depth. And when you have a movie that's very long and things happen very quickly, that means there's a lot of filler and a lot of like, just, you know, I actually had purposely put my phone on the other side of the room when I was watching this, because I didn't want to fall victim, because I was like, you know what, in a theater, like it keeps you in check because you don't want to be on your phone and stuff like that. But like at home, I didn't want to fall victim to like one, you know, getting on my phone and getting checking distracted. About an hour in, I went and got my phone. And I was not that I was like surfing the net and stuff on it, but like I found myself checking the time When I check the time of a movie repeatedly, that's when I know I'm not having fun watching it, whether I'm in a theater or at home. That doesn't change. And I found myself doing that. So, I mean, we'll get into the details and all that stuff. General opinion, disappointment. And I've already moved on from it.
Wow. Banana. I'll turn it over to you.
We'll save the best for last. You know what, Chris? I just watched the movie literally like 2 hours ago. I just finished the movie. So I think maybe like you, I'll have more thoughts that are formulating tomorrow. And some of them are kind of coming to me even now after seeing it, you know, just 2 hours ago. I already read an article online that pissed me off that I already like shared on Twitter and just like had this whole thing.
I gotta read that.
Yeah, and we can talk about it later, but I don't even know if I want to give this author or person like any space to even talk about the stupidness that he just wrote about. But overall, I thought the movie was like, it was okay, you know, like it kept me entertained. I was following. There was a lot of bits that, you know, we were like, wait, what? Oh, but he just appeared out of nowhere. Oh, you know, there was like just some of those holes. I think it was not as good as the first movie. You know, I didn't particularly enjoy the bubblegummy nature of it, right? And however, I did think the performances of Kristen Wiig and Pedro Pascal were like spot on. And I think they kind of made the movie for me. More than Wonder Woman did, you know, more than Gal Gadot. I want to see more of Kristen Wiig. I just love her and I just like watching her on screen. And I also wonder if the fact that I didn't see it in a movie theater, this was my first thought I had after the movie, was I wonder if I would have enjoyed it more if I saw it on the big screen. Mm. You know, because I really wanted to like it more. Like when the movie ended, I was like, wait, no, I want to be excited. How come I'm not excited? And I was trying to psych myself out, like, with reasons why, you know, like, maybe it's because you didn't see it on the big screen or this and this. And then afterwards, I was just like, no, that was my initial reaction. So I think my initial reaction is it was okay. It kept me entertained. There were some, like, loopholes and things like that. I wish I could have seen more of Kristen Wiig's character. And, overall, that's it. We can dive deep, but overall, I think that's how I feel.
Yeah, sorry. You know, Aaron, before you jump in, because my plan originally was to start off with a couple of positive things and then get into the fact that...
This is what happened when we were talking about Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, and then get into the fact that... So before we get into... And I lose the opportunity to say, you know, positive stuff about it. There were two.
You think I'm gonna fire off like?
No, it's just that as we talk, like you said, with Rise of Skywalker, sometimes the more you talk about a movie, you don't talk about positive things. So there were two things that I did love about this movie, aside from performances. Two scenes in particular. The first scene in 1984, where she. Saves the, like, she's in the mall and she saves the little girl from like the robbers and stuff. I loved that. And the scene where, and I was smiling from ear to ear during that entire scene, and that's why I was like, yes, this is going to be great. And the scene where she's flying, I loved that. And I felt like those two scenes, I can see in those two scenes why there were people comparing this to like Donner's Superman in the early reviews that I saw, because those two scenes to me were Donner-esque. The only really – there wasn't much else like that in the rest of the movie, which is weird. But so those two things I loved. And I did like Kristen Wiig a lot. We can get into more about that whole arc and the character and everything like that. Pedro Pascal, I love. You know what? I'll just let Aaron go. We'll get into more of that in a minute, but yeah.
Yeah. So when I finished watching the movie, I was like, damn, I'm so glad I didn't pay for that.
That's what I said. Yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't pay for that. And I felt bad. I felt really bad. Like, then I was like, I should be over the moon for this film. And I actually sat for a little bit in silence after I was done watching it. Like, I let the credits roll all the way through. Like, I didn't stop it. I just kind of let them go because I needed to digest, like, right there and then. Like, was it with, and you know, it's funny because Chris, I went into it very similar. Like, I'm just going to have fun with it.
Yeah.
Going to watch it. Like, Jess and I started watching it. It was a long night because it was Christmas, a long day rather. And she turned in early and I was like, I got to finish the film. Like, I got to finish this thing. And I didn't want to pick it apart. I didn't want to do like the, you know, but there were some glaring yeah. things that took me like, why is this happening? Why is this not a more polished film? Like, we are getting this film months and months after. Like, there were a couple of scenes in the trailers that I remember looking at and going like, I hope that either gets cut or I hope they like finish it and it ends up being in the film. And I'm like, what is this? Pedro Pascal's character reminds me of somebody else. And I had a lot of fun kind of watching that person like kind of come to life on screen. And I was like, yep, I'd love to hate you. Kristen Wiig was fine. I thought, you know, I think when they get to the point where you realize they both have the most to lose in the movie, it makes them more compelling. Like Pedro Pascal's character, like off the bat, like the whole thing with his son was awesome because it grounded him. But I was so disconnected from Diana, and that did not feel good for me. Like I couldn't get my head around, like, it just felt like, oh, you're just living your life. And then there were a couple of things where as we're going through the movie, I'm like, you're retconning this, you're retconning that. I don't really understand what the purpose is of this. And it has its bright spots. It's got a couple of bright spots. Yeah. Like, I love the use of the lasso of truth. Love that. But then it became such a trope in that entire film where she's like, that was like the only thing she's using. And I got bored of it.
Yeah.
So by the time when she, you know, and we've seen it in the trailers too, like by the time she's flying up with it and like using it to propel herself, I'm like, great, that's fine. I just saw you deflect bullets. Like, that makes that. Okay, great. The other thing that disappointed the shit out of me was Hans Zimmer. Like, I was so disappointed by his score. It starts off so epic. Like, when we're in Themyscira, it is so good. It's beautiful. I'm like, oh my God. I had like goosebumps. I'm like, this feels so different. It feels like a mixture of Gladiator. It was like regaling. It was beautiful. And then we never really get the Wonder Woman theme song, like in its fullness, in its like rawness. And that, man, that took me out. Like, I was like, this is bullshit. I can't do this.
Yeah.
Like, it got to the point, like, by the third act, I was like, can I just finish this movie already?
Yeah.
Chris, you said it's way too long.
Yeah,
it's way too long for no reason.
And it's weird because it's, again, like I said, it's too long, but there's not a lot of meat to the movie. It's hard to believe that this movie was directed by the same person that directed the first movie.
I'll be honest,
Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman is one of my favorite superhero movies of all time. I felt like that movie came across as a viewer like it was a labor of love, right? Like it was this big budget passion project. This movie, as a viewer, felt like a movie that was made because it had to be.
Yeah.
It just did didn't feel like anybody cared about this movie making it.
I'm scared for the Star Wars movie that she's now doing.
Well, like, she's also doing
this movie.
This movie rocked
my confidence in her.
Well, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I don't like to go judge based
I'm,
on.
I'm
like,
going to talk. I'll talk about why.
Two movies. That's second. Fine. Yeah, but
yeah, that shit rocked.
She's
that
also
shit rocked
signed on for a third Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah,
which is kind of hard to imagine too, because she means she's going to be very busy for the next couple of years. But you know, also different writers, right, for this movie. So she, Jeff Johns and. Was it David Callahan? They wrote this movie, but this movie felt like, in parts, like it was written and then it was revised and then they revised it again at the last minute, but forgot they left out some, like it, there was so many inconsistencies and like actual plot holes. So we've discussed on this show plot holes, right? And one of my big pet peeves is when people call things plot holes that really aren't. Like, they're just, right. like, it, inconsistent. There was, like some gaping plot holes in this movie that, I couldn't imagine that they either missed it or, like, they're writing it off as, like, oh, well, don't worry about that. Like, you can just come up with some excuse for why it happens. Like just as a, for example, how many times do they beat us over the head with you just get one wish during the course of this movie? That's why he chooses to become the Dreamstone, right? So he doesn't have to work. So Barbara gets two wishes. And, like, they write it off as him saying, like, oh, I'm feeling generous. Well, really? Like, the whole point of this was you get one wish. Like, that stuff. The other thing that I look at as, like, a giant plot hole that took me out of the movie, mainly because one of my favorite things about the first movie, and even about this movie to a point, is the chemistry between Gal Gadot and Chris Pine. I love their chemistry together, and I love their interaction. And I knew that there was going to be some wacky way that they were going to have to bring him back, right, for this movie. However, the way they brought him back was creepy. And it just, I couldn't get past it. Like, I couldn't get past the,
else's body.
Yes, the fact that his soul takes over somebody else's body and everybody is seeing the other guy, right? And it's, nobody has to worry about, well, what happened to this guy? Like, nobody's looking for him. Like, he doesn't happen to run into friend. Like, and the fact that it's not him, like, that just took me out of it. Plus, there's a lot of stuff that's on the nose in this movie. Like, the opening scene, right, is, it's really just sets the theme, right, about truth and all that stuff for the whole movie. So you know that's going to play a role at some point. And her talking about, you know, the lasso, it's truth that powers it or whatever, not me. And with Steve Trevor, obviously he wasn't making it out of this movie. And it was clear the minute you find out how he's reincarnated or whatever it was, you know how that storyline was going to end. You knew she was going to sacrifice him for to save things. Like, it was just, it became painfully obvious. It was so on the nose that it just, I didn't even have as much fun with that relationship as I would have wanted to.
I think a good word for the movie overall is that it was very disjointed. You know, that first scene, Aaron, I was like, wow, this movie is gonna be great. That first scene was one of the coolest openers of a movie that I've seen in a while. Or
it's
let's
the
say,
only real character building moment in the entire film as well.
I want to watch a movie with, like, little, you know, Diana. I want to see that little girl kind of, like, take over a whole movie. She was awesome. And her skills and everything in that first scene was, like, so freaking cool. I thought the movie was going to take a different direction. And I almost feel insulted by how kind of, like, cookie cutter and, like, on the surface this film was, that they just thought, like, yeah, you know, it's just a movie, we'll get away with that, you know. I felt like that was the attitude, and that might not be true, but it kind of feels like audiences are kind of smarter than that. So when you try and pull one past them, we notice, you know, especially fans, like, you notice. And, you know, on their relationship, Chris, that goodbye moment that they had was one of the least earned moments that I have seen on TV. Or
Love you, Diana. He's in the alleyway. Love you, Diana.
That whole thing just didn't work for me. The whole idea that, like, she's pining, no pun intended, over this guy for 70 years or whatever it's been, that she knew for, like, a minute and a half. And, like, she doesn't even hold, like, her, like, the family that she grew up with that she hasn't seen in however long. Like, that somehow doesn't have the same impact on her life as, like, this guy who she loved for, like, 4 minutes is, like, changes the entire course. Don't even get me started on the whole 70 years thing, because, like, the fact that she's been here on Earth for, like, 70 years or whatever and is still doesn't know half of her powers, like, by the time this movie gets, drives me nuts. Like, I didn't even understand that. Like, we've always seen, right, every superhero movie, when you discover you have powers, you figure them out. Like, the flying scene, like, as much as I loved it, like the fact that she needed Steve Trevor to make that remark about like, oh, it's just hair and like whatever he says, like to figure out that she could fly. Like, really? For 70 years, you've been living as like kind of like a recluse and like whatever. And like you couldn't figure, like even the invisibility thing, like, yeah, it was cool seeing a take on the invisible jet. Like that was cool. And it at least had a role in the movie. Like there was a context for it within that scene. But like even like stuff like that was like total like fan service and it was cool. But like I feel like they were checking off boxes with this movie. Like even with the Golden Eagle suit. Like why? Yeah. Why was it in this movie other than to look cool in posters and like on action figures and stuff like that?
No, to give
Linda Carter
an appropriate
right.
Cameo. I think when I compare it, when I think about the first film, there are so many great moments before she even reveals herself in her entirety at, you know, during that no man's land scene. There is like her ability to stand for truth and that man's lying. And like, you know, you see her just kind of like stepping in and like breaking eggs because she doesn't fit, you know? And like all of those things felt so good. And maybe it's it's the idea of it being a fish out of water story, but there is no defining moment like the no man's land in this film.
No,
at all. Mm-mm. No. There is no turn. There is no, and we can think about it as like maybe it's the her, you know, renouncing the wish or whatever. But like that doesn't mean anything to me because you've already done that. Like you had to let Steve go anyways,
right?
Right. Like the only moment that actually like hit something was when he repeats the phrases he said to her. You know, it's one. You know, like. I forgot what it is, like you can't save like something about you can't save me, you got to save the whole world or kind of like that responsibility when he gives her the watch. I thought that was a really cute was really cute in the way that the camera kind of zooms around them and then it changes into him. I thought that was really cool, and that connection that felt really good. But then they like, you know, they I'm not even gonna say this. They talk a lot of crap about how Marvel films like cut the legs out from those touching moments. Then you wake up and he's sitting there like on a Pop-Tart. And I'm like, dude, what movie am I watching right now? Holy shit. Like it was too funny. Like, and it tried too hard to be too funny. And I'm sorry. We said it in the last episode. A lot of people are walking around and they're doing it right now with rose colored glasses. I'm sorry, but that movie, if you tell me that this movie is better than Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman, like, kick rocks, bro, and
no,
girl.
It's not.
Like,
no,
I kick not. Rocks yeah, because that. I'm sorry, but like, this is taking, in my mind, taking one of the best superhero films, like the movie that established like a female heroine, and like dumbed it down to the nth degree. Like, oh, you know, she. And then here's the other thing. God, I'm giving myself a headache here. That first scene, I get the whole thing about the truth, but it. There's no payoff in that scene, in that opening scene.
No.
There is no payoff. It's not the lasso, because there was a lesson being taught to Diana about truth. And by that point, she's a wielder of truth. Like, that is that the lesson that you become the
and
wielder
not
of truth?
Cheating.
Like, there was no connection to like you have to give something up to get something. You know what I mean? Like that moment, that lesson that's being taught does not come back.
Mm-hmm. It was really just a way to just, like I said, establish like a theme. But to me, it was really, you know, Patty Jenkins in an interview that I read talked about how there was not supposed to be both like two openings to that movie. It was either supposed to be the Themyscira opening or the shopping mall. Like those were going to be one of those scenes was going to be the opening of the movie. And the studio was like, you can't have both. You got to pick one or the other. And she fought to keep both of them in because she just felt like that opening scene to that movie was so important to the film. And to me, I just think it was a way to bring back some of those characters and to kind of you know what her actual quote was, which startled me? She said it was necessary because if somebody is watching that movie that hadn't seen the first one and like they're just watching it on an airplane, they would need to have some backstory a little bit of the character to understand like where they're coming from. That was her quote, or by paraphrase, but yeah.
There was like literally nothing related to anything that happened in the first movie.
But also, are we making movies now for the guy watching it on the airplane? Who hasn't seen, like,
please,
you know, like, plus you're not really forced to watch movies on an airplane anymore either, by the way, like those days are where they just show the one movie kind of over. But anyway, that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, I just, and even like for me, the, like, I'm not even going to get into little things like why, how does Steve Trevor, and don't tell me it's because he's in the guy's body. But why does he know how to fly a modern plane? Why does he know how to drive a modern car? None of that makes any sense. Of course, you could try to rationalize it and say, well, but if he's in that guy's body, he doesn't have that guy's memories, right? That guy, for our purposes, doesn't exist, even though he does. So I don't buy that. That's just that's a plot hole. That's the definition of a plot hole. But even the villains. So Kristen Wiig, I enjoyed her in this, and I enjoyed the character for the most part. It was very stereotypical. Like it was the Edward Nygma in Batman Forever and Jamie Foxx's Electro character from Amazing Spider-Man 2. It was every kind of nerdy outcast character that wants to be more that we've seen in these types of movies. That's fine. I still like what they did with it. I thought she still did a good job. I just felt like it was everything happened again with her very quickly. Like she goes from that nerd to like having the powers, and then there's a middle period where she just kind of has her powers and she's finding it and she's becoming more like of a badass and more angry and whatever. And then boom, then she becomes the cheetah after she cheats and gets a second wish. And she's not the cheetah for very long. And then that's it. And that kind of doesn't go really anywhere. Maxwell Lord, I've seen a lot of people say like, oh, I love Pedro Pascal. He's great. But he annoyed me in this movie. Not him, per se, but the character. I think he did as much as he could with the material that he was given.
It's great.
But I just, the character just annoyed me after a while because it was like, what's his end game? Like, yes, I get it. He just wants more and more and more in power, and he's and I understand all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
I also feel like we would have benefited. Like, that ending seemed very abrupt and unearned to me. Flash through his life, real quick. And then it's like he sees the vision of his son, like, wandering aimlessly through this, like, war zone, and I said, I renounce my wish. Okay, movie over. All's good.
Yeah, he gets back. He gets back to wherever he lives so quickly. Meanwhile, like, Wonder Woman had to fly so far away, and then his son just appears out of the bushes and just, like, sees him.
It would have been nice, I think, if we would have gotten earlier in the film a little more time with him and his son where he's not just being an asshole to his son, like where we actually see the connection that they have. We don't really see that, and give us a little bit more of his backstory early on in the film so that we could sort of relate to him, because all of a sudden all of that is thrown out at us in the course of that wacky montage mayhem that's going on.
That third act is a mess.
Yeah,
it's just an awful
and I've seen some people say
you're
like,
just
oh,
standing there like this.
Yeah,
and there's I want it all. There's not enough power. Oh, and I'm like, what am I watching?
And there's inconsistencies. Like, again, the two wish thing, and also like there are moments where he says, "No, I need you to look me in the eyes when you make your wish." And then there are scenes like that where nobody's even, people are millions of miles away and they're wishing.
He's
and there
like,
are scenes
wait,
where
they're literally touching me and they're like, hypothetically speaking, I'll take it.
I'll take it. And then he's not even granting wishes at some points. He's just like, hey, don't you wish this happened? And the guy's like, yeah, boom. And that somehow becomes a wish, even though the person didn't consciously wish it. Like some of these things, which are like, they're nitpicks in a sense, but.
You know, well, the other thing too is, so Diana gets her wish without actually saying her wish.
Which is
Everybody that touches him has to say, I wish you success. I wish this. I wish that. Right. But Diana got her wish without actually saying the damn thing.
And she didn't even know. She was just thinking of him. Yeah. And that was it. We don't even know what she was thinking.
No. And being... wow. All right.
Sorry.
It's... Okay.
His, apparently.
Yeah, being, I think, again, that's, again, trying to be too cute, and that's where you run into these inconsistencies. So I think the point of that scene was they wanted us to assume that that's what she was thinking, right, without actually hearing it, because we're going to get the quote-unquote surprise, which wasn't, obviously, that this is how he's going to come back. But you're right. That opens up another, like, inconsistency where it's like – And then, like, I don't know, the whole, like, he needs to take something, or he can take something if he grants you the wish. Like, well,
what is this? Yeah, wasn't explained.
Diana gives the quick.
Yeah.
The quick, you know, with the monkey's. Well, then she throws. She never heard monkey's paw before.
Right. He says it.
Steve says it. And then she's like, it's the monkey's paw. She starts throwing it around like she's been using it for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that whole thing about – and that was the other thing. Like, she gets so scared, and I'm thinking, oh, cool, we're going to see another god story. We're going to, like, understand, the wrath of the gods and how all these gods are doing it. It's like the Loki character of this world, blah, blah, blah. Nope, we don't get none of that shit. It's just like, he gives the wish, and he tricks you into doing something else or takes something else.
At
a cost.
I almost feel like Diana was, a supporting character. You know, I felt like the film focused so much on Max Lord, and I can't think of a film right now that has like a main villain and maybe like a sub villain, you know, and then our superhero. But that's how this film was structured. I just can't think. I'm sure there are out there. You know, you have Cheetah, who's kind of like the sub level one. Once she beats her, then she goes on after Pedro Pascal's character. But I felt like it was focused so much on him, and she was almost like a secondary character.
Yeah.
And all of their marketing and push in the very beginning was like Wonder Woman against like Cheetah, you know, who was like her longtime foe. And the movie was just disappointing in that this whole other aspect of it made it a lot longer, caused all of these loopholes, and it wasn't even tied up really greatly or anything. No. It just
CGI sucked.
Oh, that. Well, I was going to get to that. Yeah, the CGI is shockingly bad in this movie.
I was okay with that. I was even okay with how quickly Kristen Wiig's character turns from like Barbara to, you know, Cheetah and her just like turning. I was okay with all of that. I was even okay with Chris Pine's soul taking another man's body and us just seeing, you know, Steve Trevor the whole time. I was okay with that. The article that I was talking about was some guy talking about consent and said like Wonder Woman like raped him or whatever.
Which
I thought was such a stretch. That's, and
so ridiculous.
It's over the top.
So like I can suspend my disbelief and understand that that type of trope has been used in so many stories.
Hell yeah.
Even actually like mythology, which is now, you know, Wonder Woman has a lot of mythology in her story. Even mythology, a lot of gods came down and became people, you know. Look at Ares in the last movie. So it's not unheard of. But then you want to talk about consent and rape. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. And I think it's disrespectful to people that actually been raped. I was very, very pissed off about that. But anyway, I didn't care about any of that. That was fine. I was willing to suspend my disbelief, believe that she saw him and everyone else saw him in whatever magical moment, because the stone, it creates magic. So you just have to believe that it's magic.
But the problem is, though, they destroy that for me by showing him in the mirror.
That's right. That's right.
Because
they didn't.
That tells you nobody else sees him.
Right. I wish they didn't do that. And I wish that they didn't need to show him in another person's body. He could have just appeared.
Yeah.
Just like all the other wishes, like the wall just appeared, right? Like, I wish for my land to be whatever.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, like, complexity there for her wish. She had to take a soul to like get him into a body, something like
which
that.
Which also wasn't explained in like any type of mythology. Like when they went and saw that Rastafarian guy, you know,
what a waste of a scene. And I don't understand how his name is like Jerry Patel. And he's
Frank,
like, oh,
Frank
yeah.
Patel,
Frank,
yeah.
Frank Patel. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm Mayan. I'm like, what? Like every Mexican person out there that's of Mayan descent is like, what is this?
He's like my great, great, great grandfather.
It makes
like,
no
gave
sense.
Me, like, gave
but
me
it's not
this
even funny.
Book. No, yeah. No.
I mean, it wasn't even
like, I felt like the whole purpose of that scene was to get that wrestling magazine in there with Jerry the King Lawler on, because it was like 1984 just doesn't play a role in this movie. It could have been set in any time period.
There's
except
no
for the
music that relates to
the clothes,
the
jokes,
style.
That's about it, the style, sure. You know, whatever, but the plot wise it could have taken place anywhere. And that's another thing. So here's the other thing too is when this movie is over, so we know that Wonder Woman does not have like the greatest rogues gallery right in the world, right? So Cheetah is one of her biggest adversaries. That character, you have to assume now, is done, right? Yeah. I mean, because here's the thing.
The ending was ambiguous, well, whether she rescinded her wish.
Well, she did. She's Kristen Wiig again at the end of the movie.
But Patty Jenkins said that she purposely left that ambiguous, and we might see more of her or we might not.
So here's the deal. So when that's all going down, she covers her ears, right?
Yeah.
Kristen Wiig's, whatever her name is, Barbara covers her ear. She doesn't hear what's being said, right? When it's all about the truth, she doesn't accept that.
Oh, because that works.
That might be the well. That
but isn't she? Am I wrong? Isn't she Kristen Wiig again, though, crying at the end of that movie?
No, she is. Yeah, she's got the makeup running down.
Yeah,
she's like
normal.
Sitting. She's sitting in the cave,
by herself.
But Patty Jenkins, I was reading a quote, and she said she purposely left. She wanted to tie up Max Lord's story, but she purposely left whether she had rescinded her wish ambiguous, because we might see more of her, we might not, you know, like one of those things.
So yeah, she's going to be able to just like morph back into the Cheetah thing.
Who knows?
And I read some other cooler ways in the comic books that Cheetah gets her powers than how they did it. I was like,
oh yeah. Well,
I was like, how is this? Like, this felt like a concept or a plot that was like on the floor of like the writer's room.
Yeah. And first of all, I don't know about you, but like if I had a wish and I go, I want to be an apex predator, I'd be like, why would I want to look like a cheetah? Like, I thought that idea was dumb. And then I'm like, and you have a tail.
Yeah, like, she couldn't just be like what she
that
was.
That shit doesn't.
Where she was strong.
Yeah, I'm like,
right.
I'd be like, Max Lord, look at what you did in my face, man.
There was one thing that I read of how she becomes a cheetah, because there's like apparently there's four characters that become cheetah.
Yeah.
But one of hers was, you know, because she's an archaeologist, she was trying to find this lost African tribe. And in that process, she does find them, and they do this like ritual, like this African ritual on her. And therefore she gets the powers of like the cheetah. And that kind of makes sense. Like Africa, the continent of Africa, that animal, African tribal ritual, like that all makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus like, listen, I mean, apex predator.
I'm actually glad well, that's another one of those things that, again, it just like, it happens quickly. Even though there's a lot of time in this movie, they didn't use that time wisely, I don't feel like. And, you know, one of the things I did want to talk about was like, look, not to sit here and rewrite the movie, because nobody cares about what my version of this movie would have been, but I just feel like it would have been a better movie had they not even had the Dreamstone in it. I felt like the Dreamstone is the ultimate MacGuffin, right? It's the ultimate it was a way for them to get in and out of things without having to explain much, without having to really develop much of a plot and develop characters that much. And I feel like without that, you still could have had the two, like if Maxwell Lord was not like the primary villain, but he was like this businessman that existed that was kind of immoral, right? And he was out for himself and he was shady. And he's running a company or whatever that's trying to develop like superhumans, right? Like to further his whatever, his mission or whatever. And somehow Barbara winds up caught up in that. Like he could have still seduced her, but he could have tricked her into getting experimented on. She could have, you know, become the cheetah that way or whatever. Like I think something like that. And then having her be the primary villain. Because there are versions of like Barbara Minerva where like she's obsessed with Amazons. Right. And has an obsession like that probably would have made for a better movie here.
Agreed. I feel like I absolutely agree with that. I think the territory for stones, you know, with like powers, that's already taken.
I saw a lot of people having some arguments on Twitter going like,
"Oh, you can believe, you can't believe in the wishing stone, but you can believe in the infinity stones." I'm like, well, shut up.
It's not about believing. Yeah. I mean, I believed what I was seeing. Else. I just didn't think it was good.
It's about the execution of it all. Yeah. You know, Marvel took like 12 films to lay out the infinity stones. Come on.
Yeah. Like, a lot.
So, I mean, this is the other thing too. There, you know, Chris, you talked a lot about there being a lot of filler here. There was, there was no real development.
No.
In any
even
character.
The Dreamstone. No,
yeah, it was just there. It just shows up.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's gone. And then, you know, there's like that little hunt for where it is, which magically takes them to the same place where Max Lord is.
Yeah.
Just all of that stuff just didn't make sense. And you know, I started losing interest really fast. I was like texting you guys halfway through. I was like, man, this movie's way too long.
It was hollow.
That's a great adjective right there. It's definitely hollow.
Let me ask you guys a question, because this is the first time I think all of us are seeing a blockbuster, not in the theaters and at home. Mm-hmm. Did you guys feel like it made a difference at all to your viewing experience?
So, wait, let me get this, because I'm gonna talk a little bit about something I mentioned. Yes. So, the having a TV that is a 4K TV, and look, granted, like what movie theaters show you is higher than 4K, but having that experience so close in my home made the CGI like blatantly disgusting for me in that experience. Mm. Like I couldn't take my eyes off of how bad it was.
And then there's
little things that were happening where like she's running and it literally looks like someone is staging an action figure's arms, like the way she's like running down the street like this. Sorry guys, if you can see me on YouTube, like I'm not really, like a judo chop, but like she's running that way and it looks so like unnatural. And here's the thing, I know based on watching Black Panther and Captain America movies, they have a way to make someone look like they're running faster than other people. They put them on like a treadmill and they're pulling it with a truck as someone is literally running up that mat. And it looks really cool because it looks like people are running faster, right? They're matching their speed, whatever. Just look, it was CGI to the like nth degree where they're running. She looks weird. They do the hopping thing off the truck. That looks so bad. It literally looked like there were many scenes where they put Barbara's head on a blue screen, or not Barbara, I'm sorry, Diana's head on a blue screen, and it's just like the background is all weird.
I thought the stuff
really
where she was jumping, where she did that stuff, didn't look great either. And I think at points that the lasso even started to look cartoony when it had to do too much.
So bright.
Yeah, it was very bright.
That like the motion blurring just looked off on a lot of that stuff. And like that's when I start to critique the shit out of a film, where I'm like, the CGI stuff just like was really bad. It looked
I think if you can see that type of error or mistake or whatever on your screen, on a big screen, it must be even more obvious.
But that would be like film, so like there's a graininess that's gonna come out. I think there's going to be a graininess on that screen, right? When you're watching a movie theater, it's not crystal clear. Like I've got like one of the top of the line Samsung 4K TV.
Okay.
That shit is crisp.
Okay. So like, your TV is pointing out the flaws that we otherwise wouldn't see in theaters.
Jess was watching the movie and she's like, this feels weird. Like this feels like it's all fake to me. And I'm like, it's 4K. It looks really crisp. But like that opening scene in Themyscira looks great. But once they start doing like the acrobatic stuff, it just starts to go off the like off the deep end in terms of like how it looks visually on the screen. And yeah, you can see it more, in my opinion.
I would say that, so I tried to replicate the theater experience as much as I could here. Like I had my lights off, I had my popcorn, right? I had like all of that stuff.
Aww.
Yeah, I was all ready to go. But I actually think that had I gone to see this in a theater, my reaction at the end wouldn't have been, oh, well, that's over. Now let me get on with my day. Like, I would have probably been, like, fired up. I would have been pissed off. I would have been texting, like, everybody that I know, and would have started to immediately, like, start to analyze the movie and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because my, despite what you're hearing here, I mean, we have this podcast we have to do, right? So we have to analyze things and kind of get into details and nitpick and whatnot. But like, I didn't do that after this movie. Like, I watched it at noon on Christmas Day, which is when it premiered on HBO Max. Right. And I just, as soon as it was over, I was like, all right, that's fine, whatever. Not even really going to think much about it.
There's like no good vibes.
No, I started to think about it as I realized we had a show we were going to do and I needed to start to put some thoughts down. And then also, like I said, a surprising number of people reached out to me to tell me that they had seen it and that they did not like it at all. Like, and that surprised me because, again, like, I think because more people saw it because it was available at home, I got more of an immediate response from people that I would eventually talk to about the movie, but like not usually right away. And I did see people online that I know really enjoyed the movie, so I know that there are people that really enjoyed this movie. And I also know people like Ron Diesel, who apparently liked the movie more the first time he watched it, and then it seems like with further viewings he's liked it less and less, which makes a lot of sense. I know one guy that I spoke to that told me, and he's not really on like social media and stuff like that, so he's not part of like the circle, but like he's like us in the sense that he's comic collector, loves all the superheroes, Star Wars, all that stuff. He was like, you know, after it was over, like I rated it like a 5.5 out of 10, which I think is fair, right? I probably would give it like a 5 out of 10, something like that, 5.5 out of 10. He goes, but the more I thought about it, I dropped to a 3.5 out of 10. Now, 3.5 out of 10, that's probably way too low because it's not that bad of a movie. But I get what he meant because, like I said, I feel like this is a movie that the more you think about it, the less you're going to like it. Because there are just these things. Like, it's not a well-written film, right? There's plot holes all over the place. There's stuff that doesn't really make sense. There's stuff that they just want to write off and say, oh, just don't worry about it. Like, too much of that for this movie. And the fact that it's a follow-up to a revered film that's almost, like, universally loved.
Yeah.
This surprised me so much because I felt like I didn't know exactly how I was going to feel about the movie. Like, I was expecting to really enjoy it. I felt like at the very least it would be like entertaining and all of that stuff. And I didn't necessarily think it would be as good as the first one. But what surprised me was just how, not I don't want to say incompetent, that's not fair, but like just how like poor certain aspects of the movie were, like how poor the writing was, how poor the character development was, how like Diana said earlier, like Diana plays like second or third fiddle. You know, it's almost like a Batman Returns thing in a sense, where like, you know, you have the villains of the story, and then, oh, by the way, the hero is there. You know,
yeah, I'm laughing because I was thinking, this movie is 1984. It's like cheap and sexist. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they didn't give Diana, in the first movie, she was a badass, you know? Yeah. She fought against like World War I artillery, you know? She like charged soldiers. She just did incredible stuff. And in this movie, I just felt like they cheapened her powers and how like smart she is and all that drive. And you know, we talked about this last week. I was skeptical last week with all the first reviews that came out. Remember, they were all just bubblegummy language. Like, this is like a
colored glasses.
Feel good movie. Like, I loved it. It was like this, and there wasn't a specific. Even if you don't like the movie, even if you don't like, there's many movies that maybe overall wasn't that great, but some really cool scenes, right?
Sure.
Like, oh, that was dope. I love that scene. I love that character. I don't think this movie had a lot of that. I still think the first scene was so dope and so cool. And that's probably my favorite scene of the movie. But I think that says a lot about the movie because that first scene had nothing to do with the rest of the movie, except That's that right. It was like a really cool scene.
Because it shows badasses again. It is more like the first film. You know, I mean, that was the other thing I noticed was like they stripped her of her sword and shield.
Yes.
And like to me, that was like, I was like, yo, I get what movie I'm watching. Because she doesn't have a sword anymore. She doesn't have her shield.
This felt very much like, it's going to sound maybe
this
crazy.
This felt like Shazam to me, man.
No, not Shazam. This felt to me like a big Aquaman. Budget, live action,
Aquaman
extended episode of the Linda Carter show.
Yes.
That's
yes.
what that felt like to me. And again, I was also surprised at how they just checked boxes, like Golden Eagle suit, check. Visible jet, kind of, check. Linda Carter cameo, check. Like, there were things that I felt like just happened because they were just, like, checking off little boxes that, and they didn't really serve a lot of, that surprised me because it's like, not only do you not have a lot of character development and character depth here, but you also have those kinds of moments too, which it's fine if you sprinkle that stuff in within a context of, like, a bigger film, but it didn't even dawn on me until you just mentioned it that she doesn't have the shield and the sword. Like
that to me was like that was so obvious to me when I just see the lasso coming out all over the place and like it was funny because the writing was on the wall in the beginning of the film where you see them like, you know, the other Amazonians like using ropes and lassos to kind of like zoom themselves up into that thing, and I was like, all right, okay. Now they're kind of laying it in really thick about the lasso because and I remembered from the trailers. I was like, oh yeah, we've seen all of that. But then, literally, when she pops up in her costume, and I didn't see a sword on her back, and she didn't come in with the shield, I was like, what is this?
They didn't give her the shield. They didn't give her the shield because she would have blocked all the bullets that she was receiving, and she had to get hurt. And I feel like you're not doing Wonder Woman justice if you can't tell a story and work around like her powers, because that's how it would actually be, right? You would need to write a story that's within the scope of these superheroes' powers.
Yeah.
So you just take her shield away because you're like, well, she gets shot at so many times.
She has to catch a bullet.
She needs to catch a bullet because she's losing her power, and you don't give her sword because her sword is also going to make her very powerful. She can slice through any of those guys.
And her losing her power doesn't even pay off that big, even it's not like a Superman 2 thing, right? Where he loses his powers, like, well, he completely loses his powers, but like we watch him get his ass handed to him
in a diner, messed up.
And
you see him at his lowest point. Anyone that's comparing this film to Superman 2, again, there's the door, I've left some rocks for you, kick them.
because
the thing is, like, Superman 2,
like, she still kind of has some power, like, she never fully loses her power
exactly at any point. And the thing is, like, Superman sacrifice, he makes a conscious sacrifice for love, right? That's what he does. And it's not until he's brought down he gets his ass kicked. And then that moment, he realizes that Zod and everyone else, like, they came and they took over, and he's like, shit.
Yeah.
I got to make the hard call because no one else is going to be able to do this but me.
Right.
Yeah.
He does it.
Yeah.
The whole thing with Diana was like, and I was waiting for the connective tissue, like, something, the lesson learned to the first, like I said before, lesson learned in the first, like, 10 minutes of the film to this moment here, like, even another flashback, and she's still upset, crying, and her aunt comes over and is like, you know, sometimes in battle we have to give up, you know, we have to give up winning to be, you know, whatever. Connect it. Nothing.
And you know what else surprised me? I thought the build up to the Golden Eagle suit, I thought that was going to tie into like her losing her powers, and she was going to put that on to try and combat whoever, Cheetah or whatever it is, because she needed that extra whatever protection. She has her powers back by the time she puts the suit on. So it's like she just put the suit on because she wanted new accessories. Like, there was more of a reason for Batman and Robin to throw on those ridiculous, like, ice suits than there was for her to throw on that Golden Eagle And Patty Jenkins basically like kind of says in interviews, like, well, I thought it looked cool. I loved it. I wanted to get it in the movie somehow. Well, okay. But
so Aaron, let's talk about what you were going to say about Star Wars.
Yes. So that makes me, it's the CGI stuff.
Since we're talking about Patty Jenkins. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the CGI stuff that like gets me really worried, because there were a lot of errors in there, and I'm like, if you can't see that, or you had additional time to kind of clean that up and make that the best CG it could ever be, and you just let it ride. There was a lot of framing of action with like, you know, CGI characters that just didn't look like here's the thing. If anyone watches VFX Artists React, the Corridor Crew that I talk about quite frequently, they talk about a lot of things that CGI artists will do, VFX artists will do. And it is when they have no time and they have to do or render something really quickly, they do it in dark. They'll create the scene in darkness so that a lot of those mistakes can go, you know, you miss them. So that whole fight scene with Diana and Barbara as Cheetah in the darkness, like, masquerades a lot of egregious VFX issues. Like her physics do not work whatsoever, even as a cat person. So there's a lot of stuff there that I saw. And again, I saw it in the trailer and I was like, I had some observations when I saw her the first time in the trailer, and I thought, okay, maybe they're still working on it, they'll clean it up. No. Scene is beat for beat. It's super short. Doesn't really matter. Half the time I don't even know what they're doing. They're ripping down power cords and power cables at what point? And then I thought to myself, if they're tearing down these power lines, shouldn't that stop his broadcast down below in there, you know? And no.
Yeah.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, whatever.
So,
and then like her fight. Oh, you need to renounce your wish. Yeah. She already told you she wasn't gonna do that.
Take it back.
Twist her arm. Do it. Say uncle. She's not gonna do it.
Right. And by the way, at the end of the day, it was her renouncing her wish really didn't matter that much. It was
everyone had to do it.
You needed the big guy to do it, or the people that were listening to him to do it, because, you know, one individual not doing it isn't going to stop the world from blowing up. But the question I have is, and this was my biggest issue with the whole Dreamstone MacGuffin thing, and how it, what bothered me about it too, is now that we know that there's going to be a third Wonder Woman, and that Patty Jenkins is going to be back, like, where do we go from here? You can't tell me that Steve Trevor is going to be in the next one, right? Because you can't come up with another convoluted way to bring him back, right? So that's out. Is it still going to be in this time period, or are we going to jump to a different time period? Because if that's the case, then you would figure Maxwell Lord is off the table, right? You would figure that maybe Cheetah is, I don't know. Like, I'm just wondering, like, where do you go from here? Because that Dreamstone, like, almost everything that we saw in this movie gets wiped out just by saying, okay, I give up my wish. That's it. I renounce it. Story over. So, and everything just goes away. So, like, where do you go from here?
It sucks because, like, you just wiped out everything. You don't really have a leg to stand on for the third movie. And if you start fresh, we might come across another situation where it's a long movie with a lot of things to explain and set things up again. You know, I hope it doesn't take place in 1984. There was really, afterwards, I was like, why 1984? Is it because that's when this Cheetah was introduced in the comics, and that was the only reason why, and they thought it would be kind of cool, you know, to have 80s references and make like an 80s movie?
Even, you know, the backdrop of the Cold War had absolutely nothing to do with this film.
No, none. None.
Oh, there are missiles popping up here. There are missiles, like,
and what, Diana, so at any point, like, she's already fought through one war, and you know, after that, like, World War II, right? Like, she's seen many wars.
Yeah,
there was none of that was like brought into it.
And that
as
nuclear
well.
Threat and all that stuff was, it was generic enough to where it could have been anything. It didn't have to be. They didn't emphasize the Cold War elements of it. So it's not like a Watchmen where like the Cold War plays a huge role in like the theme, paranoia and all that stuff plays a huge role in the theme of the movie, of the story rather. This was just anything. It was just countries firing off missiles at one another. Like
it was all a bunch of different countries. I know what they were trying to do. They were trying to bring in this concept of like global inclusivity. You know, like Max Lord's like child was Asian, which like is fine, but it just it was a weird thing to me that he just had like a like Asian kid. We never saw the mom. We didn't see any explanation.
No.
Even if there was a, he looks Asian to me. He looks like
not Mexican. Can't be a little.
He could be Mexican.
Can't be like a little Mexican mix with a Filipino.
He looked Filipino to me. Like he looked Asian to me. But even if what we were saying before, we were craving like a time where he was like close to his child, you know, like even if there was a scene where, you know, he couldn't have kids or the kid's mom died and he got him at like an orphanage or like adopted him and like really took him in as his own. And that taught him how to be a father, but he neglected him because he was now too focused on getting riches. And then at the end of the movie, it brings him back to like him being a father to begin with. And that's what makes him rich, you know, in life. That would have been great. But they were also trying to do this whole global spin. And I don't like it when diversity and inclusivity is in movies to check boxes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like that either.
So much wrong.
Yeah.
So, anyways,
we put that to bed, and this isn't a movie that I'm actually going to probably passionately discuss going forward. This isn't going to be like some other movies that we've seen and not liked, where like we still talk about it like years later. Like this isn't going to be that. Like I feel like this movie was just very almost forgettable, which is the biggest disappointment for me because it shouldn't have been. Like it is just like. Like whatever, like it's not bad enough to be something that you really want to talk about. And it's not, and for my taste, it wasn't good enough for me to want to talk about it. It's just kind of there. It came, it went. And
like Aquaman.
Well, Aquaman is funny because I passionately disliked Aquaman when I saw it and then rewatched it at home later and actually enjoyed the crap out of it.
Like Aquaman gets a pass now.
I don't see that happening with this movie. Like I don't see myself watching this again and enjoying it because I didn't have a passionate response to it. Mm. And I didn't have outside elements either. Like I sat on my couch in quiet watching this. Like there wasn't any noise around me to alter my opinion maybe or to change anything. And there wasn't an immediate conversation afterward to like analyze. Like I just watched it, was like, all right, whatever, that's over, and then moved on with my day and then thought of it. So like it is a very different experience you know, watching it at home for the first time. That's why I don't see myself, you know, if I do watch this movie again, having this to me, this is like it's just the type of movie that you hope a sequel to a movie you love isn't, right? Doesn't turn out to be.
Yeah.
And that's what this wound up being for me.
It's interesting because I've seen movies that I haven't had a chance to see in the theater and I've finished watching and go, damn, I wish I caught that in the movies.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I think the maybe it was The Kingsman. I'm trying to think. It may have been The Kingsman, which I was like, damn, I wish I saw that movie in the
church
theaters.
Scene. You probably wanted to watch that.
And I was like, man, that's just epic, right? Yeah. There's no point. There's no moment in this film that makes me say that. In fact, like I said before, when I opened this, my thoughts, I'm glad I didn't pay for this.
Yeah. I'm glad.
And I'm just very happy because I'd have been pissed.
Just to put a
I'd have walked out of that theater like Texans. Texting someone like, yo, Wonder Woman is a bullshit.
Yeah,
you know, my brother saw like a tweet because I was just like, I just tweeted one thing. I was like, yeah, I saw Wonder Woman, basically like shoulder shrug, and he's like dude, that tweet, he's like, even though it's free, he's like, I'm not watching it. I don't have an interest now. Like looking at some people's reactions, I'm like, meh.
And just to try and give a little update on the box office for the movie. It did $16.7 million in its opening weekend, which is for this year, which is not a bad total. It's I think somewhere around like I forget what the worldwide gross is for it right now, but it actually did, and this makes sense. It did its best numbers in like large format, like IMAX screens, Dolby Cinema stuff. Like that's where it did its biggest audiences, which makes sense. Cause if you're going to go to see it in the theater, you're going to go because you want that experience. Right. Mm-hmm. Like that. So, you know, for obvious reasons, but clearly they were happy enough with whatever. I don't know how they're going to judge this, but they were happy enough with it. It did exceed expectations. The projections were anywhere from 10 to 15 million. So it, I guess, you know, that's something. It's 85.4 million worldwide through Christmas weekend. And they were happy enough with whatever returns came because they immediately, you know, greenlit a third movie with Patty Jenkins. So, you know, again, we don't know what now part of that could also be a, our bad, you know, we kind of sandbagged you with throwing this thing on HBO Max and all that stuff without any premium. It is premium on demand in Canada. Maybe that's kind of a consolation to say like, hey, look, I know we get it. We kind of screwed you over on this one. So here, we'll let you do like the third one if you're willing.
Can you imagine paying for it for a home video experience? And paying
if I had done that, I mean, now having seen it, no, but
hell no,
I still would have, but
I would have too.
Yeah,
I would set up a little dummy.
So let's talk before we go. Let's talk about something that I watched this weekend. Well, I watched two things this weekend that I enjoyed. One of them was Soul, which is fascinating. Yeah. It's a Pixar film that was directed by the same guy who directed Up, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, and also Inside Out and the first Monsters, Inc. So it had a good pedigree, and I enjoyed it. Though, you know, watching it, and I do know a couple of people who have, you know, little kids who they enjoyed it. I watched this and I was like, man, I don't know how any kid would be able to relate to this movie because it's dealing with like themes, stuff that I'm dealing with at this point in my life, like existential crisis, existential questions, stuff like that, that like no little kid is going to, I mean, I guess they could get into like the animation and the little animals and stuff like that or whatever. But like the big themes of this movie are very adult and very middle age as well. By the way,
I caught 10 minutes of the film and that was exactly my thought there. And I mean, I started watching with my daughter and like, she was like, nope, don't want to see it. I'm good, daddy. And I'm watching it and I'm like, this shit's deep already. I'm like 10 minutes in. I'm like, and this is why, and this is the thing too, because I'm like, I have to watch this one on my own time.
Yeah.
Because she's not going to want to watch this.
Right.
But there was something that was talking directly to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to figure that out. And the other thing too is just in the what I watched. So my father-in-law is a piano player, he's a pianist, and I know how much love Pixar puts into like making sure that when a character is playing a musical instrument that they're playing the right keys, the finger placement is exactly what you're hearing is what if someone was playing a piano for real life they would be playing. And so I was like, I got to see if that's legit.
Yeah. Because
they did it for Coco, right? The finger placement for the guitars.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So I
put it in front of my father-in-law. Yep. He watched it and he was like, that's spot on. I got to, what movie is this? And he's a dude that does not like animated films at all. And he's like, I'm like, I just gave you access to my Disney Plus account. So have that. He's like, I need to watch this.
Yeah. There's That's a scene cool. where he auditions. It's early in the movie, but he auditions for like a jazz band, and it's one of the best things I've seen in a movie like all year. That whole scene where he's auditioning and he gets lost in the moment.
That's awesome.
It's the music, the animation, the themes, the whole thing
the
is just
feeling
like,
that comes.
Oh
off of that,
my god, it's just so brilliant. Good. The other thing that I saw that I really liked was the gallery, Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian. So. This is like a, it's almost like an, it's over an hour long, a making of season two. Although I don't, they don't touch on the Luke Skywalker thing.
They skipped right over
it. Skipped right over it. So, but they do talk, show the Boba Fett thing, the Jabba's palace thing. So I don't think it's for spoiler purposes. I think it probably has more to do with, they, maybe there's another episode coming up
there's
that might,
episode.
Yeah, just focus solely on that, which makes sense. But this thing was great. I watched it three times. I had so much fun watching this because this, first of all, you talk about attention to detail, right? And like passion project and loving things, like these guys, Favreau, Filoni, really everybody involved in this, they love this so much that it just oozes out of like even this special. It's the most amazing thing. And there's a scene where there, or not a scene, a segment where Dave Filoni, who we all know, he's like the ultimate Star Wars geek, right? He's sitting there and he's actually like, they're trying to, like Boba Fett's like standing up with the blaster and he's like, no, no, no.
Dude,
Boba,
oh my God,
hold
yes.
it. He wouldn't hold it at that angle. Like you got to keep it like, and they're literally trying to get the right angle for him to be standing at with the blaster. So it looks like Boba Fett, like stuff like that. That's like, this is blowing my mind right now.
Yeah.
Like all these little geeky things.
And you want to hear something? That attention to detail, like speaks to people who are big fans, like that, when he comes down, that scene, that specific scene that Filoni was like, tuck it here, do that, tilt it that way. When Temuera Morrison is coming down as Boba Fett and he's got that position, I'm like, that's Boba Fett. Like, holy shit, they nailed it.
Yeah.
I knew it off the bat. Yeah. And the other thing that I loved too was like, there's still room to tinker and play with things, like to add color to who Boba Fett is.
Sure.
And like the Maori background of Temuera Morrison and him asking for a longer, I don't even know the name of the weapon that the sand people
the
use.
Staff. Yeah.
The staff, because it was like very similar to things that he'd use in like traditional Maori dances.
Mm.
And then they modeled the whole fight sequence.
Yeah, after his dance after movements like a very, and stuff.
Yo.
So cool.
And by the way, he looks like a badass doing that dance too. Like that's a bad man.
Dude.
That is a
yes.
When you
I'm
see
gonna
him,
watch that tonight when we get off.
Yeah. It's it just like this
so,
and if you remember when we reviewed or talked about the Ahsoka episode, right? I said, you know, this is gonna sound really stupid, but like when you first see her on the screen, like my first reaction was like, oh, wow, that's Ahsoka. Like it looks like Ahsoka, right? Even though like, because I knew like Rosario Dawson was going to play it. But ironically, like there's a segment in this episode where they actually kind of talk about, they're like, Dave Filoni's like, I was so concerned about getting the look of the character right because it had to look human-ish, but still look like this character that I had like drawn. And it's like, well, so maybe what I said wasn't that stupid. Like he kind of had the same thing that I had, like, it's got to look like Ahsoka, even though it's Rosario Dawson, like things like that you're just like, I mean, Rick Famuyiwa comes off really great in this. Like he's having like the time of his life doing this. And he seems like the coolest guy ever. Robert Rodriguez has a thing where he talks about how because he built up Boba Fett in his mind like everybody else did, right? For all these years. And he's like, no, you gotta understand, like, Boba Fett has to be everything that people have wanted him to be, like, forever. And he actually shot in his backyard with his sons. He put one son in a stormtrooper helmet and one son in a Boba Fett helmet and shot like a fight scene to make sure that like to show them so that, and he used Star Wars action figures because he didn't have stuntmen. So like you see like they take a swing and then like a little like stormtrooper flies like in the thing, and he did this animatronic thing with it and it's cool. They show it in this show.
That's so cool.
And he's like, I show it to John, to I don't remember, it was to Dave Filoni or John Favreau. Like, I showed it to them. They're like, that's the coolest thing like ever. He's like, but he wanted it.
It's the most Star Wars thing ever.
Yeah, he's like, I just needed, like, I needed that he goes, I needed that episode to stand. Like, if we never saw Boba Fett, like, ever again, he said, 'cause I didn't know if we were going to, like, that needed to be like the definitive Boba Fett, like, moment, like, right there. So just all of that stuff was just like, Bryce Dallas Howard is like, she's just loving life doing this. Like, she's,
yeah, the confidence that is coming off of everybody involved is like, it feels so good.
Yeah.
You know, Peyton Reed, talking a little bit about what it was like for him to come on, and like the pressure that he felt
to have to nail final episode.
To nail that final episode, you know, they talk about Giancarlo Esposito and you know, his passion and like, in terms of like the anger and rage that's fueling his character, and like how that impacted the fight scene, and you know, the prop master getting upset because they were like breaking lightsabers or darksabers.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff. It was, and another cool thing is that you actually see Pedro Pascal like in costume most of the time, with the exception of a couple of you know, stunt people and and a gun. There's a gunslinger.
It was cool when they were like, oh, because like Giancarlo Esposito, obviously he's not, and the Moff Gideon character is not a, like, he's not a swordsman, right? He's not a, so he had to kind of fight like just a guy who's angry but doesn't really know what he's doing really with this thing. And like, they actually, so it took like a bunch of takes to kind of get that down, and because of the technology that they use with these, they actually use like lightsabers, like, because they want to be able to capture the light, like
the ones that you have.
So they want to light, they want to be able to like show how like it's going to light up like a shadow, take, you know, all that stuff, like for the lighting of the scene and stuff. But like, yes, obviously that comes with a price because they run through them as they break. But yeah, it's just, it was just awesome.
Definitely check it out.
It's a, as a making of special, like it's as entertaining as any of the episodes like in the season. It's just like, it's so cool to see.
Oh, the other thing too is they, and I'll leave it here, but they go back to season one. When episode five, when you see the legs walking up to to Fennec and her body on the ground, and they talk about Boba Fett, and he and Favreau and Filoni are saying, do you think people are going to know that this is Boba Fett? Because our guy wears spurs, but this guy's spurs are different, and he's like, so Filoni theorizes, now remember, this is way before anybody has ever seen an episode, says they're gonna think it's Mando, but then why would Mando go back? And then that's when Favreau goes, but our guys, like our guy wears the spurs, but these spurs are different. And he's like you think they're gonna know it's Boba Fett? He's like, I think they're gonna come around to thinking that it's Boba Fett. So like, and I'm like, and I remember I was watching, I was like, you mother, you guys knew the whole time. And I'm like, I love you, I love what you're doing, like, just keep it up, man. You guys are so good, laying it on thick. Anyways,
yeah, so watch that, everybody.
Watch that up.
All right. Well, it wasn't the review I thought we were gonna have, but it was an honest one.
Yeah, and I'm sure I'm gonna get a lot of shit because everyone's like, Aaron, you don't like anything. Right, Tavo? Oh, you don't like anything. Like, here, you know what, DC, you make better films and I like your shit. I mean, you keep things in the Joker realm, or, and that's the thing. Now, you know, it's funny because I have given DC a lot of shit, but I adore Joker.
And Wonder Woman.
I adore Joker. And Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
You know, and I gave, you know, Aquaman's okay for what it is, but like, yeah, Shazam is shit. Wonder Woman 84 to me is shit now. It's like, I don't know what's happening here. I'm really looking forward to Zack Snyder's Justice League. That's all I'm seeing now. It's where it's at. So on that happy note.
All right.
Let's get out of here.
So go to the fanboygarage.com and you could check out our episodes. You could check out our merch, all that fun stuff. Of course, you can join the conversation on Twitter, which means go yell at Aaron. You don't have to worry about me. I'm at Real C Almighty on Twitter, but we're also on the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram, of course, YouTube now as well at the Fanboy Garage. So find us there.
And you guys can find me at banana_TFG. And our YouTube is the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
There you go. Now, Aaron, tell them where they can yell at you.
Yeah, you can yell at me, scream at me at @AaronSpeaks on Twitter. That is @A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you so much for listening to episode 126 of the Fanboy Garage. We hope you guys have a splendid new year, and we'll catch you guys in 2021.
Peace.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.